Hey there, everyone. Welcome to Speak Now Pro Wrestling. It is Denise Salcedo. You're here on the channel, and we are going to talk about AEW Dynamite. However, I'm not alone on this special edition of AEW and Speak Now Pro Wrestling and all this and that. I have a very special guest with me today from comicbook.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Connor Casey. Connor, thank you so much for joining me here today on the show.
What's going on, Hollywood? Thank you so much for having me on the show today. I've always wanted to co-host one of these with you, and we finally get the chance.
Yes. So I got to tell you, I basically put out like a couple weeks ago, I'm sure some people saw it on Twitter. I put out this like thing where I was like, hey, I'm looking for, you know, cool people that can come onto the shows and kind of chat some wrestling with me and all of that good stuff. And when you reached out, like you and I, we see each other all the time at all these wrestling events. Like the amount of times we've seen each other at AEW has been insane. And I was like, I like Connor. He's not a weirdo. He's really nice and he's super chill. He's in.
Well, when you put in the open invitation, it was like, they need a demo reel. I'm like, crap, I don't have one of those. Hopefully I still count.
Well, I kind of like, it was easy for me to like bring you on because I kind of already knew you. So it was like, okay, I already know Connor. So I'm going to bring him on. He's at the shows all the time. Like we're going to have a good time. So Connor, thank you so much for being here. This is a very exciting episode of AEW Dynamite to talk about because I feel like we got some big news to get into, which we're going to touch on in just a second. But before we get to that, and then we also, once we get into the entire show and everything that went down here today, we're going to be going through all of that. But before we do, just a heads up to everyone. First and foremost, my new unboxing video. I officially surpassed 100,000 subscribers, as you guys know, and I got my YouTube Creator Award today. And it's kind of, Connor, ended up kind of being a little bit of an emotional video. I was trying so hard not to.
I saw the photo. That was pretty awesome. Do you still have it?
Yeah, it's in the living room right now. Because basically, I didn't know, like, you actually have to, like, nail it. Like, you just can't. Like, it could probably be leaning, but I don't want to lean it and have it, like, fall. So I actually have to nail it to, like, a wall or something. But that video's up. You guys can check that out. And also, if you guys want to help support this podcast, get your questions, your comments, your statements read here. You guys know the drill. Send in those super chats. We will be reading them here today. And then also, if you want to become a member, we actually got Cheeky Monkey, who just became a member here on the channel. Please join the channel. I have so many different perks from exclusive videos to certain podcasts. I also bring in YouTube members to basically come on to the shows and talk about wrestling. We just did that last night. It was a hell of a good time. So that's some of the perks of being a YouTube member. But let's get into these super chats. And Grapple Geekery kicks us off with our first topic, Connor. Grapple Geekery says, I'm so thrilled for Will. He is truly all elite. So the big news, so just literally this Sunday, we did our last episode of After the Week. It was the final show after 8 months, and we already knew that Will was going to be off to AEW, and so it was just a matter of like waiting for the official announcement. And Connor, all day long, I kept like refreshing my feed. I was like, when are they going to make the announcement? And so finally, the announcement was made today, probably like 45 minutes before AEW Dynamite, that Will Washington is officially all elite. In fact, Tony Khan basically said that he is his role is Wrestling Administration Coordinator. So very, very fancy title for Will Washington. And basically the role is going to basically cover many areas of wrestling. This is straight from Tony Khan. He says live events, social media, creative PR, and puts him over for having a great wrestling mind. And today was his first time backstage. Now, I kind of already knew most of this because, you know, Will had told me, I had known this news for quite a bit. So I was just so happy for Will, man. This is so exciting. Connor, what was your reaction to seeing this news?
So I actually had someone tell me about this last week. I was off to the NFL draft and someone texted me. They said, did you hear about Will Washington? I'm like, wait, is he okay? Like, what happened? He's like, no. It's a very good thing. I was like, oh, that is so awesome, man. Just had the pleasure of meeting him a couple times. Just a pure, consummate professional. You know, what he was doing with Grap Shady, what he was doing with Day After Dynamite, all the different shows. He's always been a blast to watch. He's got a great mind for the business. He's obviously connected, you know, and he's been connected to the business for years, so he'll fit right in. I can't wait to see what he does.
Yeah, I can't wait either. And that's the thing. Like, when and I know people that have already seen his podcast, whether you watch Day After Dynamite, After the Week, or Grapsody, people know that Will has this really good, like, mind for wrestling. And on top of that, he has, like, this – we always kind of, you know, talked about this on our podcast, where he has this really great memory for things. And you're like, dude, how do you remember all of these dates and stats and, oh, this match happened then and this match happened? Like, that's kind of insane. Like, not a lot of people can do that. And so, you know, I think that just him getting brought into AEW is really cool, because he is going to, you know, get to work in creative. He's going to and people have heard his pitches on his shows, and just it's really awesome to me. It's one of those things where it's like, sometimes, Connor, and you know this as a person who's like always working and always trying to do stuff, sometimes seeing things like this happen to people that put in the work, it gives you hope, man. You're like, fuck, like, yes, like, things can actually happen to good people.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, it, and for a lot of folks, you know, what Will has achieved now, that's the dream. The dream is, you know, to one day take the hobby and turn it into the career and go to the places that you've been talking about and covering for years. So I'm thrilled for the guy.
Man, me too. Simeon sends in a super chat saying, opening match angle, Sammy and MJF interactions, plus the BCC and Kenny's promo, along with the main event, were so good. I thought today's show, I kind of felt like 50-50 on it. I thought there were some things that I felt I really enjoyed, and there were some other things that I kind of thought were just there. But for the most part, it still felt like a pretty decent episode of Dynamite. It wasn't my favorite episode of Dynamite, but it did have some decent moments. But thank you so much to Simeon for all of the love. Nick Grosso sends in a super chat saying, not a very good show tonight. The only highlight for me was the Hikaru Shida swerve for a minute. I thought she can't join the group. Doesn't matter. Doesn't make sense until I saw Britt and Janie come from behind. So this was something that I will put up there with my highlights and favorite moments of AEW here tonight, especially because I feel like one of the things I have criticized a whole lot is the Outcast, because things haven't necessarily been, you know, too great in regards to that. So let's actually talk about that now, Connor. Let's get into it. I know I said I was going to go in chronological format, but screw the format. Let's talk about this. So we ended up getting, I'm going to pull up my notes. Where the hell are they at? Like, where the hell are my notes for this at? I'm supposed to be a professional, Connor. So we have Saraya versus Willow taking place here today. And this was a lot of fun because the entire match, what you were seeing was Willow be outnumbered. And, you know, Saraya and Tony and Ruby were basically getting in cheap shots whenever they could. At one point, it kind of seemed like Willow could kind of, you know, hold her own ground, but it definitely wasn't enough. And so this essentially led to Saraya getting the victory. But it was afterwards that we saw the return of Hikaru Shida. So when she ran in, you're thinking, okay, she's going to make the save. She's going to help out Willow. But then she basically teases that she is actually aligning herself with the Outcast. And then while you're thinking, oh my God, she's going to align herself with the Outcast, all of a sudden we see Britt and Jamie from behind. And there's this moment where, like, everybody's sort of stilled. And then you realize, no, Hikaru Shida fooled them, and she is with Britt and Jamie. And so I want to start off by asking you, what were your thoughts on Saraya versus Willow? How have you been feeling about this program, and what did you think of the Hikaru Shida swerve?
So going in order, I love Willow Nightingale. I think she can absolutely be what everyone thought Bayley on the main roster in WWE was going to be and didn't quite pan out. Every time I see her cut a promo, perform in front of people, whether it's a small crowd or on television, she's always delivering, and she's always got that same just utter ferocity underlying just a natural positivity. That's very hard to manufacture. So the fact that you can tell it's legit, like, no, she's a legitimately happy person, she can also just wreck you with a pounce, is great. As far as and we'll get into this, I have a feeling we'll get into this later, the pacing of some of the programs on AEW TV right now frustrate me, and the Outcast is right there at the top. in that it just felt like every week it was the Outcast will wrestle somebody. There's plenty of interference. It really doesn't matter who wins because then it's the 3-1 beatdown. Britt and Jamie are going to run out from the back. Spray paint's going to be involved somehow. And repeats. And it just, at week after week after week, it was like, guys, whatever this is, isn't working. Now with this one, when Sheeta ran out, and because we've been so cyclical with this, when Sheeta ran out and you think she's going to fight them and then it looks like she's going to side with them, I go, wait a minute, does this actually make sense? It feels like she's been off TV for so long and this keeps repeating that I honestly couldn't tell if this turn made sense or if, wait, that doesn't make any sense. I thought they hated each other. And then it didn't matter because, no, she's with Britt and Jamie, which legitimately makes sense because if we're putting the originals together, Sheeta's right there. She's kind of the standout amongst the Joshis. Riho has a bit of an argument, but I think Sheeta did better. And obviously, my money is still on this all leading to a blood and guts match, and I absolutely want Sheeta involved in that. So on that front, I'm all good.
Well, especially when she comes out with that kendo stick and she beats the life out of anybody when she has that. But I like a lot of the points that you made there because it is true. And everybody who's tuned into this podcast for, you know, previous episodes, you know, we've talked about this kind of wearing us down with the Outcast to the point where it was sort of like you didn't even care anymore. Like, I didn't even care to be a fan of the Outcast anymore because they were rinse and repeating, copy and pasting the exact same story, the exact same format. And so for tonight, for that to be one of the highlights of the show, that actually makes me kind of go, okay, this is good. I'm glad that they're at least sharpening things, that they're switching things up. And even like last week, with the drama involving the Outcast attacking Britt Baker, I feel like that one was like a miss for some people and a hit for some people. It worked for me. I did like the drama in all of that, but this was definitely the strongest that this whole entire program involving the Outcast has been.
For sure. I will note this though. Sheeta as a heel is absolutely something I want to see at some point. Her coming out in the Yakuza look just screams like late 2010s Naito over in New Japan, where it's like, I want to see you just running a women's Yakuza all through the women's division. That would be fun.
It was a nice tease, huh? Like, even though it didn't make sense and you're like, wait, why is she going to align with them? It was still a nice tease to kind of see her, like, kind of in that, you know, in that heel light. And I think that's part of the reason, like, she did it so well, even if it was just for a brief couple of moments, that a lot of people fell for it because she really made you believe, like, okay, she's legitimately joining them. Even though it didn't make sense, you were still like, okay, I'm interested. And I thought that really worked out a whole lot. Thank you so much to Nick Grasso for sending in this generous super chat. Cheeky Monkey is a brand new YouTube member here. Also sends in a super chat saying, watching you look at your plaque for the first time, you made me cry. Couldn't have happened to a nicer or more deserving person. Man, thank you so much, man. I'm so happy with the way that everybody has been reacting to that video because it was just one of those things where Connor, I just turned on the camera and I'm like, I'm just going to talk and whatever the hell comes out, I'm just going to let it run. I did have one minor mishap in my video though, because as I was going to open the box, I didn't have any scissors to open the box. No. So I was like, hold on, got to go run and get them scissors. But thank you so much to Cheeky Monkey for becoming a subscriber here and also sending in this lovely super chat. All right, so let's go ahead and press on from here. We got a super chat from Simeon who says, Sheeta played with my heart. She definitely played with a lot of people's hearts for sure. Sheldon Jackson sends in a super chat saying, I'm still in the camp that the Outcast is not good. I know previously I said that they're worse than the Nightmare Collective. I'll correct it now. They're the second worst faction in AEW has ever created. Now, this Sheldon has been very outspoken about this.
QTV exists right now. So no, that's the wrong answer.
Do you hate QTV?
I can't stand it. What? It's 2023. Why are we doing a TMZ parody? Like, why now? Like, I don't know if you guys saw The Lonely Island. They did a couple of movies together. The first one was Hot Rod. It was fun. The second one's Pop Star, and it's amazing. And it's got this TMZ parody just spread throughout where they just obliterate those guys. And I was like, that's it. No more TMZ references in pop culture ever. We're done. And that's like 2015. So what are we doing?
See, I don't hate Connor. I actually like the concept. I really do. Because
you're Hollywood Salcedo.
maybe that's why, right? No, I really actually do like QTV. I'm not going to say that every week is like good stuff, you know, but I will say that the majority of it I have found, you know, to be some pretty decent comedy. And I know that the pairing of like Hobbs and QT kind of had a couple of people going like, what are we doing here with these two guys? But I, aside from everything that they did with the actual championship with Hobbs and taking the belt off of him, I love your guy. He's so cute.
He's adorable. I have a sound booth right here. He loves to dive into this thing and then just start meowing and scratching at the walls. So every 5 minutes or so, I got to throw him out of there.
What's his name?
His name is Binks. His name is Binks. He's a very good kitty.
Like from Hocus Pocus?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know what's up, man? Because I love Hocus Pocus.
Nice.
But okay. So, you know, that's why I didn't hate QTV though. Like I did hate that they took the belt off of Hobbs and how they played that whole thing out. I did hate that. But I thought QTV for the most part was kind of, you know, working for what it is. And I get it. Like TMZ. I still think like I don't watch TMZ very often. I mainly just go on like Twitter and see if they post something, then, you know, yeah, I'll definitely read it, but I don't watch the show. I don't know how many people actually, you know, still do. I'm sure a good majority do. I don't know.
Unless they pull aside a wrestler or Dana White says something outrageous, like you're never going to catch me watching that thing.
You're like, nah,
but
pass.
Yeah. So coming back to the Outcast. Let me ask you this, because like I said, I really feel like Blood and Guts is where this is leading to. And the battle lines are kind of being drawn, but they're still stuck at three. So who would you add as the other two? Assuming this is a 5-on-5.
Okay. So we got on one side, you got Tony, you got Britt. Hold on. We got Tony, we got Ruby, we got Saraya. Then on the other side, we got Britt, Jamie, and now also Sheeta,
so Willow, and presumably Sky Blue. Like she's always.
I feel like they would
there.
Have to be Willow and Sky Blue because they have been the ones that have been involved in these attacks as well. And then Riho, you can't forget about Riho. Almost forgot about Riho for a second. Yep. Riho too. And so for me, like I'm wondering if they're gonna maybe do like a 3-on-3, a double or nothing, or something along those lines. That's probably what they're gonna do, considering that's like literally this month. But I would not mind the Blood and Guts because I want to see the girls, you know, get down and dirty and have this moment. And especially with Britt Baker, who already has a history of, you know, having these like bloody warfare. So I would really like to see that. So I'm glad that you pitched that. But as for two, I would definitely have to say you got to throw in Riho somehow, Willow or Sky Blue. Those ones make the most sense to me. And then for to join the Outcast, though. Who else do we got, though?
Well, Tay Conti, if we're going purely off of, like, former WWE people, Tay counts. I know.
She does count.
I know she's
really
not everybody's
does.
Favorite cup of tea, but, I mean, it could work. I'm still curious as to Jade and her potential involvement in this, because it feels weird that we've got so many women involved, and then Jade's off doing her own. She's off on an island like Cody used to be, where it's like, you know, you can have her intermingle with other people.
I want to see her program continue to advance with Taya Valkyrie because I feel like that ending, you know, last week
could end a double or nothing. I'm talking.
They can continue that. But afterwards, depending, because if they have Jade Cargill drop the bow to Taya Valkyrie, which I'm kind of hoping they do, you know, I don't know if I necessarily see her going into that program, getting involved there with the Outcast and all of that. I don't know. I feel because like you mentioned, she's sort of been off doing her own thing as TBS champion that I feel like I haven't necessarily been like really associating her with this storyline versus more. I'm wondering like, you know, besides Ty, I'm pretty sure there's somebody else that we're not thinking of that could probably join up with them. But that's some good stuff though. Sheldon Jackson.
Athena, she's
been like, you know, everybody's had nothing but great stuff to say about the work that she's been doing on Ring of Honor. So I feel like Athena, and because she's very hard hitting, that would actually work very well too. I like that. I like where you're going with this, Connor. And Sheldon, I'm glad that you at least bumped the Outcast now to the second worst. James Hammond sends in a super chat saying, I don't see any AEW collision on the event page. I still think that they're probably waiting to get those details out to the people. And we're still, you know.
Right. If you need proof, they literally, the latest trademark filing is get made public today. Collision was on that list. By all indications, this will drop at the upfronts later this month. Because Warner Brothers tends to announce the big TV announcements like Rampage and the network change. That happened there. It wasn't Tony Khan coming out and saying, hey, you guys, we're changing nights. No, nothing like that.
Although he did give that major Easter egg, though, when he was talking about the tournament, the Owen Hart Cup tournament. Yes, and then he mentioned July 15th, and everybody's like, bro, that's a house July show. 15th's on a Saturday. Yes. Yeah. But no, you definitely got some points there as to when they might be waiting for, you know, probably waiting to, you know, dot some I's, cross some T's before they make like the official announcement. With that being said, Connor, how do you feel about an additional show being added? Are you excited about Collision?
I'm good with it in theory. I need to see it in practice because I was good with the concept of Rampage. But I think as we've seen it unfold and we've seen the audience, I don't know if it's even, is it half as big as it was when it started? Is it even half?
It's definitely been feeling like a decline.
Every week it feels like I see a headline that says Rampage viewership down again. And it never quite feels like must-see television. And a lot of that is just by the simple fact of it's the extra hour that gets filmed after Dynamite. So the crowd's not as into it. They might have left because Wednesday night, do you really want to stay till midnight for a show? Whereas with Collision, if it's a separate tour with its own roster, then we get into the whole, well, if only half of your roster is available, you have twice as many opportunities because now suddenly who are your main eventers of Collision? Who are your top draws? What are the big programs that you might not necessarily see on Dynamite? Because I'm one of those guys, and I know I'm in the minority on this, I like the brand split in WWE when it's actually enforced. Because then it forces the show that doesn't have Roman Reigns to go build up people. And it gives this thing like AJ Styles being WWE champion for over 500 days. The planet champion version of Daniel Bryan. Kofi Mania. Kofi Mania does not happen if the brand split doesn't exist. So for AEW to kind of nudge in that direction, that's great. What I really don't like is the Punk thing. Because you never want to give a guy so much power that you literally say, we're going to base the show around you, and anybody you don't like doesn't have to be on this show. That is way too much power for one person. And so, how many stories, this is my last bit of the rant.
No, go for it.
How much of WCW history, particularly in the late 90s, is defined by a couple of wrestlers having just a little too much power and dictating everything that happens and every plan falling apart because one guy has got it in his contract that I have final say over this creative and that doesn't work for me, brother.
So I will tell you this, Connor. So here's the thing about this, and I see this a lot differently, where I see it more so, I don't see it as a con with this, because from what has been put out there is essentially that CM Punk was, you know, the draw. He was the reason. He was the, you know, the reason why, you know, the network wanted to, you know, do the show. Okay, well, CM Punk's going to be a big driving force, a big driving factor in that actual show. So for me, it's like, you got to have somebody like that, right? Like, I know a lot of people hate CM Punk. I know a lot of people shit on CM Punk and this and that, but people cannot deny that regardless, CM Punk draws eyeballs and people are interested in what he does. Like, you literally, like, you know, I do these videos, right? I do the latest for F4W and I do these videos, right? Sure. And they, you know, average a certain amount of views, right? CM Punk comes out with a story. Obviously, it's my job to cover it. I swear to God, those views are like all the way the hell up here. And compared to the rest of anybody else that I put, they don't even get the same amount of views. And that just kind of goes to show, like, I know a lot of people crap on CM Punk, but people are still, you know, interested in what he has to do. Now, also, I do believe, like, I don't think that, okay, I don't think that this is necessarily going to be like CM Punk going axe you, I don't like you, axe this, axe that. I don't really see it that way. And I hope that it's not that way because, you know, that would obviously suck. And it will create, you know, some form of tribalism between the roster itself. And you don't want to do that. Can you imagine if one person just wants to get booked, but all of a sudden they're booked on one show and suddenly you're seen as, you know, the guy who's playing for that team instead of this team. And you automatically got heat with somebody over that when you're just trying to get booked on the show. So that is very unfortunate. But I also do believe that when people are stars, the stars are going to have demands. And you, if they're worth it, you are going to listen to that in a reasonable fashion.
That is fair. I think that after, I mean, how many stories did we read last year about the backstage environment in AEW and how chaotic it got, particularly after the Brawl Out incident, to where do you really want to invite more situations like that? Because here's the problem nobody talks about is that at some point you got to have pay-per-views where everybody's in the same building again.
Yeah. Oops. And that was a big topic when this was reported. People were like, okay, well, if you're going to have separate brands with separate people that want to work with each other, how is it going to work for the pay-per-views?
And what's the one thing everybody's going to want to see when Punk gets back? Like, how many, I've lost track how many times I've heard Kenny versus Punk booked for All In, Punk and FTR versus the Elite at All Out. I've heard it booked constantly since those two shows got announced. If that's right, all people are going to want, and you're not going to deliver that because these four people don't really like each other in real life, so we're not going to have them on TV at the same time. The fans don't care. They want to see the great matches. And they're going to be like, well, why aren't you giving us that? Because yada, yada, yada. And then they're going to be pissed. Now that's going to suck. So that's where it's like, I'm fine with Collision's existence. I need to see the execution.
Yeah, I agree, especially because of Rampage, though. I do agree with the execution of it because Rampage did start off, you know, just on a better foot. And now it's kind of gone and it's sort of, you know, in the shadows for me right now. Like, it's not like top priority type deal. Grapple Geekery sends in a super chat saying, when I see all three outcasts on a match graphic and a lone opponent against them, I roll my eyes. Why don't the originals come out together? Dumb. I've been saying this for quite a while now. Like, even just like, if you know that you're going to get this attack from the outcast, at least be ready for it. You know, try to be two steps ahead when you've already been seeing the same thing replay over and over, right? We got Tim Weininger Jr. who says, would love to see Marina join the originals. That would be like, I don't know. I still haven't felt too strongly yet about anything that she's done so far. Thoughts, Connor?
I haven't seen anything since that You Don't Know Me promo that went a little bit viral for the wrong reasons. And technically, she would be more of an outcast because she was over there in the Fed. So I don't know.
Melissa Cabello sends in a super chat saying, "Will dumped you, AEW. How dare him? Kidding, good for him." I know, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Right, the disrespect. You know, you could have been here on YouTube. Magnum Waite sends in a super chat saying, congratulations on your 100K milestone, Denise. Hopefully the momentum keeps building for you. God, I hope so too. I pray for it every day. So thank you so much to Magnum Waite for sending in this super chat. Thank you very much. Cody Anderson sends in the super chat saying, if QTV lasted longer than 1 minute, I wouldn't like it. But for a 1 minute gag, I'm okay with it. You know what? I agree with Cody on this one. If it was like not a 5 minute thing, but you know, a little longer every week, then maybe it would be a little bit too overbearing. But for the most part, it's fine.
I'll take Jeff Jarrett being on that farm up where the Briscoes and everybody badly doing yard work. Give me that segment every week than over QTV because that was funny.
That was great. Can't wait to talk about that. Heidi Ho says they should bring in Nia Jax to join the Outcast heel beat guarantee. No, Heidi Ho, I appreciate you. I adore you. Thank you for the super chat, but I have to give you a hard pass. Disagree on that. Connor, you're nodding your head. What do you think?
Hard pass. I'll leave it at that.
Like, I don't want to say anything more than that, honestly, but I think everybody could sort of read in between the lines on that one there. Thank you so much to Heidi Ho for that super chat. All right, so let's get into the show and let's talk about some of the things we haven't discussed yet. And let's kick things off and let's see. Ooh, we have a question here from Steven, actually, in regards to this, to the Outcast, and he's a YouTube member as well. And he says, what if Thunder Rosa is the mastermind for the Outcast?
I don't hate that. It would be, what would make that funny is that I don't know how many folks have been watching the All Access show.
I don't think we need to know the beef, right?
You really don't, but it would basically be this whole thing, including this backstage reality show, was a work just to set up this program. Because if you've been following that, that doesn't make sense at all.
So you're talking about like the actual All Access, like it hasn't been making sense?
No. It wouldn't make sense for it's like, and actually she was secretly working in a program alongside Britt Baker the whole time. It's like, no, I really don't think they actually like each other.
They, I don't think they do either. And that's just gotten so deep, so personal. I even hate sometimes, like, I don't even like to click on the hashtag when I see anything on Twitter, you know, surrounding both Thunder and Britt, because it's just, oh, it's a mess in the Twitter comments. And it's so hard because it's not like we know what really went down between them. So it's very hard to be like, oh, this person's to blame or whatever.
And they don't have to like each other for both to be successful.
So. Right. And that's the thing, like, you're going to have politics, right? You're going to have people you don't like. We've all been in a situation where we worked with someone that we didn't like. And let's be real, like, we're humans. There's going to be all of that. Heidi Ho sends in a super chat saying, I got heel heat from mentioning Nia Jax. So yeah, they should obviously bring her in. Heidi Ho's thinking like WWE right now, or like Vince McMahon. Let's get that heat. It's good shit, pal.
I'm thinking like SRS. Thanks for the extra $5.
I love it, Heidi Ho. Heidi Ho is always in here bringing in some good conversation pieces to the table. So I appreciate it, man. We got Carlos Franica. Thank you so much to Carlos, who says, will they use wrestlers from their YouTube show? Wait, what are we talking about here? Where are we going from here? Sorry, Carlos. I need some clarification on what we're talking about. Did you understand this question, Connor?
I don't. Does it have something to do with Dark like being canceled? I'm not sure.
Okay, sorry, Carlos. You don't have to send another super chat, but just clarify your question in the comments just so that I can make sure that that we properly answer your question, because I don't want to give you a bullshit answer if I don't know exactly what that was in reference to. So I'll keep an eye out there for your comment as well. all right, so let's get into our opening match here. And our opening match, oh, thank you. Ender Buckley clarifies here that this is in regards to Dark Elevation, saying he's asking if Dark and Dark Elevation people are going to be used somewhere now, I think. Okay, so we are talking about Dark and Dark Elevation. Here's the thing about that. That show gave a platform to a lot of people, to a lot of young stars that, you know, are working the indies, that haven't necessarily, you know, made it yet, right? They're building their names. And I have talked to so many talents, Connor, that, you know, got a couple of matches on Dark or Dark Elevation. And now because of that, they are, you know, being booked just so much more on the independent scene. They're being requested a lot more. And so having those appearances on Dark and Dark Elevation really mattered. Now, I don't know if we're going to see a decrease in some of those talents being coming in, or if maybe they can find spots for them on Ring of Honor for those that maybe wanted it, or, you know, if they're going to find some other way to go about this. I don't know. Any thoughts here?
It's my understanding that Ring of Honor will kind of partially help fill the void left by Dark and Dark Elevation. But you're right. It provides a great service. It's effectively a tryout match anytime you're up there, because, you know, the AEW officials obviously see it. If not necessarily Tony, the coaches, the producers, they're all back there. They all see it. So it was a great boon for the wrestling industry. Now, I don't love that it would what that does to Ring of Honor, because I love what they're doing right now. And to fill more of that with just enhancement matches kind of stings.
Yeah.
But they're in a tricky spot right now with Warner Brothers Discovery, where they're like, we want as much content from you as possible, except Ring of Honor. And we want it to all be on our networks. So stop with the YouTube stuff. But on the other hand of that, like, I've been to Dynamite tapings. They start with Elevation and then you get to Dynamite and then you get to Rampage. It's a long night. And you don't necessarily need those an hour worth of warm-up matches. You really don't. You need one, maybe.
I agree, because I remember the last Dynamite show at the Forum. It was the dark matches, which was fine, you know, but, and I didn't even catch the whole thing, okay? I only catch like the latter end, but it was the dark matches. Then we had all of Dynamite, and then they actually shot more dark matches. And keep in mind that before they even shot those dark matches, it took a second to like set up the ring. And then they shot the dark matches. Then they kind of, you know, did something with the set and everything in the ring. And then we got into Rampage. So I remember sitting there going, oh shit, I gotta go. It is a long night though. And I thought that like, even though the crowd was really amped and excited, and there comes a certain point though, Connor, where you literally are like, okay, I'm a little bit done right now, you know? So yeah. Thank you so much to Carlos Franica, and I'm sorry that it took us a second to get that one there, but just wanted to make sure we're all good. All right, so the opening match, we ended up seeing Orange Cassidy and Bandido, which I love the pairing of these two, and Adam Cole and Roderick Strong, who just made his debut last week into AEW against the Jericho Appreciation Society. This was a brawl, but you know what? They kept this very go, where you were just seeing all these guys pretty much just try to get their hands on each other. So it did feel a little messy, a little chaotic, but sort of a different start to Dynamite than we have in the past. So Adam Cole does get the win for his team. Connor, I'll start off by asking you how you felt about this match and how you feel about the pairings of Cassidy and Bandido, at least what we've been seeing, and then the return, or rather, excuse me, the debut of Roderick Strong.
So as far as Cassidy goes, I tweeted this last week. I stand by it. I think Cassidy is making a weirdly strong argument for Wrestler of the Year right now. He's not going to win a lot of those, but he's going to be in a lot of people's top fives, probably including ours, because we got some folks on staff that really like him. We had him in the top five the year he had the program with Jericho, so that would have been 2020. But, and I thought like, oh, that's it. Like they don't really want to push him as a champion. But then they give him this international title. He's had like 20 defenses, 12 of which have been this year. He basically opens every Dynamite. His matches are always great. And now I don't know what this pairing up with Bandido really means. If it's just, hey, it's funny to see the guy in sunglasses for a few weeks. But if he just keeps doing this, I got no complaints. And I'm going to be like, yeah, he's right up there with Roman at the end of the year when you're talking about best of the year. Roderick Strong being so criminally underutilized after the Undisputed Era disbanded. Was a crime. Was a crime against wrestling booking. And to see him back and to see him just unload with backbreakers and all of his high fast-paced, high-impact moves, I love to see it. I saw this guy at a Ring of Honor house show in 2016. I saw him open a SmackDown against LA Knight on the dark match. And to see him now, and he dude always gets better. Like, he doesn't age. And B,
no, he
does so much just effortlessly that looks like he just murdered the other guy's spine. So I love to see that. And then the last thing I'll say is Adam Cole, love the guy to death. I busted out laughing when he tackled Jericho, because for some reason Jericho decided to, even as he saw him running up the ramp, he just keeps looking at the monitor and keeps his headset on. I'm like, Chris, look up. And he just wails him. I'm like, why was that so stupid?
I loved this attack, and someone just commented right now from Sask's writer too, who says, speaking of go, how about Cole sprinting at Jericho? I love a good attack, because damn, he freaking ran and like literally leaped, like launched his body onto him. And that's the thing, when you're coming off an attack like that, where you were held down, had to watch your wife get beat up by multiple people, and you literally couldn't do anything, and this was all at the hands of this man who was basically, you know, the driving force in all of this, you can't just go in there and be like, well, I'm a little bit mad. No, you gotta be freaking pissed. You gotta be livid. This is the kind of attack that suits the story, suits the program that we're actually seeing. And then even afterwards, where we saw Britt backstage slapping Jericho, I loved this attack. And the thing with Jericho is, I feel recently a lot of people are kind of like, oh, I remember when he got into a story with Ricky Starks, there were some people that were really not caring so much for wanting to see that. I did, because I'm like, it's still Jericho and Ricky Starks is going to get that rub and this and that. But it didn't necessarily, like, that whole thing kind of dragged with the Jericho Appreciation Society and Starks and all of that. But you, I think we want, like, this to me, the story here with Adam Cole, based on, you know, last week and this week, I'm really feeling like this could be something that I'm just a lot more interested in, because I'm really liking these attacks. I'm really liking I like how personal it's gotten so fast.
See, I don't dislike Jericho. It's all of his programs run just a little too long, whether it was Max, Eddie, even Ricky to a degree. It felt like, okay, you had the match. That's it. But it's like, no, we need to have a bunch of 6-man tags, and then we need to have another match, and I need to get the win back. And then we'll have another match like 4 weeks later, and then I'll move on to something else. And it's like, it can just be the one. It can be the one-off. So when Adam and Chris start interacting, I'm like, let this go to Double or Nothing and then stop. If we're still here at Road Rager in like mid-June and we're still doing this, and be like, guys, let Adam do something else.
Like, let's press on. By the way, Carlos Harnica, thank you so much. You didn't have to send another super chat. I'm so sorry. But he did clarify that he means wrestlers from Dark and Dark Elevation. So I hope you caught our little, explanation about that earlier. But yeah, you know, it is going to suck for those talents that aren't going to have this platform now to, just to get those bookings so that they can continue to grow their names and help them out in the independent scene. So thank you so much to Carlos. And again, I'm really sorry that you had to send in another super chat. I'm really sorry. Okay, so now let's go ahead and get into, we already talked about Saraya and Willow. So I want to get into the 6-team Tres de Mayo Trios Battle Royal. Now, I'm going to be honest here. This was not for me. I thought that it was, and I kind of had a little bit of different hopes for it. And there were some spots that I did enjoy here. Don't get me wrong. Like, I did love seeing Vikingo, the way that he eliminated Josh Woods. There was one really funny part. I don't know if you caught this, but QT scares off Alan Reynolds, and he never actually puts his hands on him, I don't think. And you just see Alan Reynolds like throw himself. I was like, bro, you eliminated yourself. And I probably have to rewind and rewatch that. But I'm thinking like, okay, if the first time I noticed that he was never even really touched and he just threw himself, that's kind of funny. But I did like, you know, Hobbs in his interaction with the Lucha Brothers, eliminating them, and then Vikingo doing that crossbody, but Hobbs catching him and eventually tossing out Vikingo. That was really my favorite part. Like, that interaction with Hobbs and Vikingo, I thought was really good. The Acclaim being the ones to eliminate Hobbs was also fun. Butcher and Blade doing their scissoring, that was pretty funny. Bowens almost being eliminated and holding on with one arm was another thing. But for me, I just kind of felt the placement of this match so close to the opening match that was kind of, you know, also had similar, you know, you had a bunch of men and they were going at it, and it was very similar in the way that it was, you know, chaotic. I kind of would have liked this later on the night, but also I wish that there would have been like a real purpose for this match. And I also really wish that they wouldn't have eliminated the people that I was most looking forward to in executing the big moments in this, and that is, you know, Vikingo and Lucha Brothers. I think they could have kept them at least till the end, you know? They didn't have to win, but I would have at least liked to see them a little bit more.
Sure. Yeah, the match was weird. A, it was really quick, like, for a battle royale. It felt like they were like, you have 6 minutes, go. And, you know, people got their stuff in. You had a couple of fun spots, but then it's like, well, what trio do I really want to see win this? It's the Lucha Bros and Vikingo by pure virtue of who they are. And then when it was like, okay, it's obviously not Butcher and Blade and Kip, so then it's the Acclaim, but I don't really think of the Acclaimed as a trio. I think of them as a tag team with Billy Gunn just kind of being there because it's funny.
Like a cheerleader.
And especially when right before this, you get the super serious promo from House of Black where they're like, hey, we're getting rid of these title designs. I hope we get like a House of Black version of those because that sounds amazing. We're going to do our version of the Freebird rule, which is here's a bunch of different like rules that go into the house rules match. I'm like, hey, I'm all for wrestlers having their own distinct like gimmick match. So this idea sounds great. But then to turn right around and go, and your first opponent's going to be a comedy trio and not even like the one that people like in the Dark Order. Like, it's just, it's the tag team and his manager. So I don't get the thought process, because when we talk about how stacked the trios division is, this ain't one of the teams I'm pining to see.
You're like, this is not what I'm referring to specifically.
And it's like Double or Nothing's at the end of this month, and you're telling me that's the match we're getting? Like, did we just need to get Max and Bowens on the show, and this was the best we could do? Because that's a bummer. I'm honestly, this could happen next week and move on. I'd be fine.
Yeah, I don't blame you on this one either. All right, next up we got the TNT champ Wardlow, and he wins in a squash match. He defeats Logan LaRue. I'm sorry if I could mess up his last name, but he
Jobber
defeats him.
Jobber McJobberface, who cares?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't want to, you know, mess up his name or anything, but I did anyways. But this is another squash. This leads to him calling out Christian and Luchasaurus, and basically says he wants a match against Luchasaurus. He's going to, you know, give him a title shot against Luchasaurus right here, right now, for the TNT championship. Instead, Christian Cage comes out and he says, no. This bout is not meant for Luchasaurus. It's meant for me. How do you feel about Wardlow once again being TNT champ? And how do you feel about this story so far, the beginning of it with Luchasaurus, Cage, and Wardlow?
So I have a theory about the TNT championship. I will not pull up the photo. This is a family show. But the photo of Sammy and Tay and the TNT title, you know which one I'm talking about.
From
about 18 months ago, yeah, that cursed this championship. It has never been the same since, with the very small exception of Samoa Joe being the king of television, just because I love the irony of that. But with the mild exception of that, this title has been cursed to the point where the international title feels like the second most important championship,
yes,
in the company, instead of this should be. And even now with Wardlow, it's like, hey, I just had this match and I want to call it Luchasaurus. I'm like, okay, your coach is standing right there and you are suffering from stupid babyface syndrome right now. So, A, why isn't Arn telling you, son, you had your match, let's go to the back and we'll do this later? On the other hand, I love Christian as, hey, I'm just running the basic heel playbook and I'm the biggest piece of crap in the world right now. And he's got the tactical turtleneck. And he comes out there now with Luchasaurus, who we just decided is Kane. He's just Kane now, and he's not going to talk, and he's red. But the idea that, oh, Christian wants to go after the title, I'm like, you know what? Screw it. It could be fun. So I'm fine with that little reveal at the end. But Wardlow, much as I like the guy, like I had interviewed him before his last match with Hobbs. Great dude. It's still just not clicking. And I hope what they're doing with him and Arn is the answer to that. I also feel like that needs to be a heel turn, because Arn is better suited as a heel, and that makes sense, but I don't know. But bottom line, Wardlow, Christian, sure. Let's see what they come up with.
Yeah, and I do trust this one a little bit more, just because I really trust Christian Cage's mind. And, you know, he's been in the business for, you know, such a long time. He's had such a great career that I don't feel like this feud with him and Wardlow is going to fail. It's just that we are really having to make up for a lot of time that Wardlow... we had to make up for a lot that didn't necessarily work so well with Wardlow. And I don't really think the people really, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I don't think people were too keen on the idea of Wardlow being TNT champ again. So of course that's, you know, everybody has their different opinion on that, but I personally was a little bit over it, just because I felt like we were just seeing the same things. And I sound like a broken record where I'm like, I'm so tired of these squash matches for Wardlow. And I get it, they're just the in-between stuff before he gets into what he's doing with Cage and Luchasaurus, but I'm like, let's at least get some matches with a little bit more depth, because there's only so many times that I'm going to ooh and ah over a Powerbomb Symphony. And I know the crowds, I mean, that was something someone brought up on our last show last week, was that the crowds always react to it. I'm like, yeah, because the crowds are there. They want to have a good time. But while I'm at home watching on TV, I'm over the Powerbomb Symphony.
Right. Right. And it's weird, because so I was listening to somebody today try to fantasy book completely random tangent, I know. Someone tried to fantasy book Cody building his way back up to fight Roman again. And he said the way to do it is to have Cody come out. Like, he could literally hit rock bottom, go down to NXT, start winning a bunch of matches, go back to Raw, win a bunch of matches there, win the Rumble, and, you know, fight Roman again at Mania. And I'm like, okay, that company doesn't build stories purely in the ring like that. This one does. So me singing the praises of Orange Cassidy earlier, a lot of that came from, hey, he just shows up every week, defends the title, the match is great, so we love him. You can take that exact same strategy with Wardlow if you want to, and they just don't, they just not gonna, because they're just doing the Bill Goldberg playbook. And if we're getting Bill Goldberg, great. When's he coming? Because he's not here yet. So
are you going to be anti-Goldberg when he comes into AEW?
Okay, here's the thing about Goldberg. We give a lot of credit to a guy who almost killed The Undertaker in the ring. So if we're going to bring him into AEW, after everything we saw in WWE, the best case scenario, and notice how I label this, it's the best case scenario. He comes in, he fights Wardlow, and he loses. He looks at Max and says, "You're next." And he loses that one, too, and then he's out. That's the best case scenario. There's no way in hell that's happening. But that would be the only way I'd be okay with
this. I don't know. Like, it's not, I don't see it as too far-fetched. Honestly, I really don't see it as too far-fetched. And then there was even like
here,
a...
But he's out here talking about, oh, I deserve a retirement match. I was promised one. I'm going to go on a four-city world tour. It's like, you really think he's the kind that's like, no, I'm going to do the honors for the young kids now. No, he's... He doesn't strike me as the type.
I can see him. I can see him at least taking the L in AEW to Wardlow. I feel like, you know, and Wardlow recently did an interview where he spoke about this. And I guess he said he saw Goldberg at some con or something. And they agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you, WrestleCon. And they agreed to basically, you know, if they ever had the opportunity to have the match together. And I'm like, come on, well, let's be smart here. We don't want to see Goldberg defeat Wardlow, but I would like to see Wardlow defeat Goldberg.
This is the same man who looked at The Fiend at his pinnacle and said, I should beat him. And never lose to him ever. And we think that guy has changed that much in the past couple of years? I don't think so.
We got a super chat here from Richard Martinez who says, Denise is right. Battle Royals suck until the end. It's true. I hate to be this person, but I don't care for Battle Royals until the very end. Like, I'm just here for, like, the last, like, you know, four guys. Once we got four guys or four gals, whatever we're doing, that's when I started getting invested. But thank you so much to Richard Martinez for sending in this super chat. We got a really funny comment from Farron Wolf who says, support the not SEAL Salcedo. Long story short, I always said that I didn't want to be a trained SEAL on camera. So now I'm SEAL Sado.
Got it.
Oh shit, that sounded way louder than I anticipated for. Sometimes there's times where I'm on these podcasts, Connor, and I'm like so like enamored with what I'm saying, and I'm so invested, I start banging on the table, and then I'm like, oh wow, that's really loud. All right, so let's go ahead. Jesus, why is everything sounding so loud to me right now? Okay, let's see what people are saying here. And let's see. Wrestling Fan 316 predicts that it wouldn't be taking a loss. Heidi Ho says Wardlow needs an injury angle and be taken off TV for several months. It's the only way to get him back over, in my opinion. I don't think so. I really do think, like you mentioned, Connor, this company, AEW, you can get people over. They have known for getting people over legitimately just by putting on these good matches. If we just break the cycle that we're seeing with Wardlow, he can definitely get back up there to where he used to be. Alrighty, everyone. But before we continue on, because we still got so much more to talk about in regards to AEW and everything that took place, I'm going to give a shout out now to our sponsors here, WrestleRumble.com. I adore WrestleRumble. They are so freaking cool because, as always, as wrestling fans, we like to fantasy book, we like to predict, we like to do all of these things. Well, they have the Backlash Pick'em contest. And so, what you do, this Backlash is happening this Saturday. And they basically give you a prompt and you fill out the prompt. You predict what you think may or may not happen at Backlash. And whoever scores the most points ends up winning the prize. And get this, Connor, there's four prizes. Fourth place is going to take mystery prize. Second and third place take home $100. And the first place winner will take home $1,000. That is some serious money. The deadline to enter for the Backlash Pick'em contest is on Saturday, May 6th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So right before the premium live event. Guys, head on over to WrestleRumble.com. Please give them some love. Let them know you heard about them here on the show so they can continue to sponsor us and give us some love. So thank you so much to WrestleRumble. And guys, if you want to have a little extra layer of fun while you're watching Backlash, go ahead and purchase an entry over at WrestleRumble.com. All righty, and you did a very good job, Connor. You got the nodding on point.
I do. I love those guys. And what's funny is that I make predictions for a living about wrestling, and I never win that thing. And it always drives me nuts because it's like, oh, I've got this thing nailed. And it's like, you got 20 points, and the winner had 70. And I'm like, ah!
You're like, you were so proud of your 20 points.
Right. Right, exactly.
Oh, man. All right. Let's see what we got here. Let's get into this really entertaining video that we got between Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Jeff Jarrett, Satnam Singh. So they all go down and visit Mark Briscoe over at his house in Sandy Fork, Delaware. And what we got here is, if you did not, I think they might have posted this on social media too, but if you did not watch Dynamite, please go out of your way to watch this video, because this was one of those things where they had like really stupid comedy that works. Okay. And basically they all went out there and they were all wearing like overalls, and it was just so ironic to see them dressed that way. And the way that they shot this, it was almost like a music video, but not a music video, although there was some singing a little bit from Jeff Jarrett where he was about to start singing a rendition of With My Baby Tonight. But then he gets interrupted by Papa Briscoe. He comes in and he's basically telling Mark, like, look at these goofs. Like, don't be associating with these freaking goofs. Look at them. And so Mark's kind of like, which one are you talking about? And he's like, the one with the overalls. Which one is that? Yes. And so Lethal and Jarrett essentially issue a challenge to FTR for the tag team titles at Double or Nothing. And they're asking Mark Briscoe for what the strategy is going to be to actually defeat them, you know, because they have in the past. So how can they do it? And so before he can answer, the video officially ends, and that's pretty much a wrap. But this was so freaking hilarious. Please, please go out of your way to watch this. And also, I want to see more of this.
There's something legitimately funny about seeing Satnam Singh, all 7'5" of him, in overalls working on a farm. That just killed me. Jarrett just being the old guy who's like, I'm just going to play on my guitar and everybody has to listen to me now. It's like, ugh. But, you know, the Briscoes have done so many skits and promos from that farm in Sandy Fork. It never gets old. I always love seeing it. Mark Briscoe's comedy always works for me, so... As much as I'm in that camp where I don't need to see Jeff Jarrett on TV so much. And I know so many people have just taken to the give Jarrett every championship. It's 2005 Impact all over again. It's like, no, y'all didn't live through the Monty Brown thing. You're lying. You don't want this. And I love how basically his existence on TV is a troll. And that's funny to me. So... This was great. More comedy stuff like this where they don't take themselves nearly as seriously. And just if this is all we're getting between now and the FTR title match, I'm fine with it. But yeah, this worked.
We got a lot of funny comments here that I want to pull up, or rather some thoughts on all of this. We got Christopher, who says the segment between Mark Briscoe's dad, Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, Satnam Singh, and Sanjay Dutt tonight was awesome. Pile Driver's finisher says, if no wrestling, then this. Steven says, Jeff at the guitar is the best. I love the close-up shots where they're like really close-up shots of them, and they're like, like doing these weird faces. John Teller says, Denise loves anything with a Jeff Jarrett. I am a Jeff Jarrett fan, by the way.
You're one of them.
I'm one of those. I'm one of those Jeff Jarrett fans. I know. And Ender Buckley says a giant carrying a baby just works. It does. For some reason, I was like, why is this like filling my heart with warmth? Like seeing Sottenham with the big overalls carrying the baby was so freaking over it. He was so over it. There was a screenshot that I posted on Twitter and the baby was like, how'd I get involved in this shit? Oh, man. It was a lot of fun. Everybody's putting this over for it being a really good segment here on this is good. This is from AFC and TP who says, this is exactly the kind of nonsense I needed tonight. Sometimes I just like need stuff like that, right? Like stupid shit we can laugh at. And you want to know why? Because that's the stuff you remember. Do you have any idea how many times, Connor, I'll go down a rabbit hole of just like watching old, like, you know, random moments in WWE history where there's just, they're probably not like, you know, what people would consider iconic or whatever, but they're so funny. Like, you know which one I always watch, and sometimes when I'm just having a bad day I'll just go and like watch it, is this one's random. It's when The Rock is telling Hurricane Helms that he's nothing.
You're 5 foot nothing. Someone yes. called. It's for you. It's nothing.
Love yes, that one. And it's little things like stupid shit like that, that just, oh my God, I freaking love. And there's, and it's, I've incorporated that into my own life. Like I will make those jokes. Like I'll tell my husband, like, oh, it's nothing. Nothing says, nothing called. This says he knows you. You know, just like dumb stuff like that. So those are the kind of moments that when you look back, you're like, oh, do you remember that one time that so-and-so, and you just want to watch these things. So I think they need to do more stuff like that, you know?
It's funny how, and it's the perfect exemplar that AEW is like the variety show. In the same show, we can get this. We get Kenny Omega and Moxley threatening murder inside of a steel cage. I love that.
Yeah, yeah, I feel you, man. All right, so let's go ahead and get into Juice Robinson versus Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks, a really nice, solid victory for him. Hits the spear, hits the Rochambeau, and defeats Juice Robinson and gets the win. What'd you think of this match? How have you been feeling about this program?
Jay White needs to be on my TV more often. I love Ricky. Juice was always more interesting to me as a babyface. If you've ever watched, especially his G1 work, when he's a face, he's got that Dusty Rhodes-esque fire. And I don't use that comparison lightly, but he's got it. And when he turned, it was like, oh, we're losing that now. And now it's just the, oh, I'm rock hard jokes. Get it? And it's not clicking for me. Jay White should be... If he's not world champion within a year, something has gone wrong. That guy has every ability in the world to be a star for AEW for the next 10 years. And WWE let him get away. And the best answer they have for him right now is put him in a two-man faction that's an offshoot of Bullet Club, where the real Bullet Club is saying, you're not part of us. And it's like, that feels like such a step down for Jay. Like, he just beat Okada less than a year ago. It's like Bronson Reed. Every time he's on Raw, it's like, this man's fighting Dexter Lumis. He beat Okada recently. This is a downgrade. But, you know, if this is leading to Jay White versus Ricky Starks a double or nothing, sure. But this was nothing.
I get what you're saying, because I've kind of felt it's kind of one of those situations where Juice Robinson is getting more out of this pairing, and it's leveling him up more so than it is Jay White. Like, Jay White's fine, you know, doing him and being whatever he needs to do, where right now it does feel like it's a one-way street in terms of, like, what we're getting here. But I do have hope, though, and I don't want it to be one of those things where we're not seeing Jay White at his full capacity, his full potential. In fact, when Jay White came into AEW, like, I made the prediction that night that I firmly believe that at some point by the end of the year, I do think that we're going to be seeing Jay White up there as AEW champion. And I know that was I know they got people, but I'm like, you got to make some crazy predictions every now and then. And I feel if they play their cards right, they could definitely have that. I would love to see a program with Jay White and MJF. Like, are you kidding me? That'd be freaking great. So I do kind of, I would prefer to kind of, because I'm not like, how do I say this? Recently, I haven't been feeling Juice Robinson too much lately, where it's more just been so like, okay, I like Juice Robinson, but that's kind of about it. Nothing more, nothing less. Don't hate the guy. I just haven't been feeling so like, oh my God, I can't wait for this, you know, for Juice Robinson. So it really hasn't been there just yet. And for Ricky Starks, I think he's, you know, I do want to see some like back and forth promos between Ricky Starks and Jay White. Like, I would love to see that. And that's more so where my interest lies when you're mentioning all of these people. All righty. And let's see, we got some people. I know some people are like, no, they're not ready for Jay White to be champion, but I'm sorry, guys.
They weren't ready for him to be champion eventually. Last time, and man, it worked.
Yes, there were so many people that hated Jay White, like when he first started doing his stuff in New Japan, like so many people didn't like him, and then all of a sudden people got on board.
Like, and I was there with them, that first championship reign, when it was obviously just, yeah, Kenny left, we need a Gaijin to lose to Okada, MSG, let's give it to Jay. Didn't work.
Not me, Connor. The thing is,
everything since then worked so well. When he established himself as the counterpuncher, when he lay down for Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom and said, just freaking pin me. I don't want to fight murder Ibushi. And then Ibushi was like, no. You're like, and then just beating up, like, true story, my girlfriend's sitting right over there. I was sitting in bed watching the Dominion replay when he beat Okada last year. And he hits the Blade Runner and wins. I'm like, he freaking won. And she jumps like, what? And I'm like, this should not have happened, and it just did. And it led to a great Wrestle Kingdom, and this just feels like a step back, and that's a shame.
Yeah, I don't feel that strongly in terms of it feeling like a step back, I guess, mainly because I'm like, okay, well, this just got started. But you also can't compare it to what he was doing with New Japan at the moment right now. Sure. You really can't compare it. And so I do hope that's what I'm saying. I hope we get some bigger programs for Jay White here. And if, you know, Ricky Starks is a great first, you know, starting point, but I do want to eventually see him get in there with, you know, some of these like bigger names or more established names that they already have on AEW. But everyone, before we continue on, we got our main event to talk about here today. But before we get to that, just a friendly reminder, everyone, that I do go live here on Tuesdays to talk about NXT. We had a really great NXT post show yesterday, which was really good. I'm here on Wednesdays for AEW Dynamite, and then Fridays I am here for SmackDown. I will be back this Friday, and I can't wait because it's going to be like, you know, literally the go-home show into Backlash. I still haven't decided if I'm going to do a Backlash watch-along. I'm still on the fence debating. If that's something you want to see, tweet me. Let me know if that's something you're interested in. The more tweets I get about it, then I'll actually do it. But if no one says anything, then I'm just going to be like, if it's crickets, then I won't do a watch-along because it's a lot of work just to be, you know, talking, you know, the whole time. So anyway, so we'll see. Let me know how you guys feel about that. So now let's get into this main event. So our main event was MJF and Sammy Guevara taking on Darby Allin and Jungle Boy. With MJF and Sammy, if they won this tag team match, the Double or Nothing main event would be MJF versus Sammy. However, if Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, and Darby Allin won this match, they would then be added into this match, and thus it would make it a four-way. Well, after the main event tonight, with our end result, we are going to be seeing this fatal four-way match. The Pillars are going to be going at it at Double or Nothing, but I'll start off, Connor, with what did you think of this specific match? We did get to see, man, my two favorite parts in this, there's two of my favorite parts, was Jungle Boy, literally Energizer Bunny, man, going back and forth, freaking suicide dives over there, freaking knocking this guy out over here, running full speed. Then we see Darby. Then I thought at one point afterwards, I thought Darby was trying to top Jungle Boy with the speed at which he was moving at, because he goes in there, he hits the code red like it's nobody's business. It was so good to see. And then later on in the for the actual finish, we see a little bit of, you know, some tension between Jungle Boy and Darby, but Darby gets the official win with the coffin drop.
This is the opposite of how I feel about Collision, in that I hated the idea, but I loved the execution. I went back and I checked. They first teased us with this Four Pillars match in mid-March. You have any idea how much has happened in the world since mid-March? We had WrestleMania. Cody tried to finish his story and failed and got beat up by Brock Lesnar, and now he's trying to fight for an ugly world championship here in a couple of weeks. A lot's happened, and we've still just been like, God bless Tony Khan. Sometimes he just wants to tell a story from A to B. Sometimes, in order to get there, you got to take three left turns and take a crossing pattern before you get to B. And all I wanted, all you had to do was say, we want matches and we're going to earn them by all winning, I don't know, five matches in a row. Or all we're going to find a way to pin Max or force Max to lose. The way they went about this, where they all come at him at once and say, we want matches. Him cutting promos on all them each week. Them really not being able to stand up against him because, with the exception of Darby, and that's only in certain situations, none of them have the promo chops that Max does. And he just kind of runs circles around them. And then this whole, oh, it's a tournament, but it's a three-man tournament, but I'm going to pay Sammy to win for me. You could have made this so much simpler. That being said, the execution was great. Max and Sammy, I wish this best friend thing went longer because they're entertaining. That like I'm gonna
it's
mash
borderline
up their
meat. For me. It's entertaining. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit annoyed here.
But it's so over the top and saccharine that it worked. Like he deliberately mashed up their music. So they had matching gear. They're doing the best friends hug, and I'm emotionally drained after telling you how I have problems with my back after carrying this company for so many years. Like all of that worked for me, and then for the match itself, for them to implode. And Max be out of the picture for the final sequence. For Darby to basically like, hey, Jungle Boy, I'm going to hit you with the coffin drop unless you move. That's on you. It's like, and then the way he pinned him, he never broke eye contact with Jack as he turned. And I'm like, God, little stuff like that. You would not get this in other places. And I like the fact that it was in the match, the little details made this feel like it mattered so much more, even though in the end it was a result everyone in the world expected, and it was the can they coexist story, the thing that at the other place we despise, but they still made it work. That was so this match by itself, awesome.
It was weird because it was clearly a coexist story, but it just hit differently though. It hit differently.
Because you actually bought that they didn't, that at least two of them really didn't like each other.
Yes, but they also had like this reason. They had a purpose. It wasn't just like, oh, let's just put them together and see if they can coexist. No, this was an actual purpose where it was in their, it was in Jungle Boy's benefit to team up with Darby because they want to be in the match and vice versa. And so if you give it a reason, if you give it a purpose, then it could work, right? So, and this didn't feel too bad. And I think like the whole annoying thing with Sammy Guevara and MJF, again, it's like borderline funny, borderline annoying. But also one of the things that I did want to mention too that I also enjoyed was even before this, just like MJF telling Sammy Guevara, like really kind of making him like a look like a goof and setting it up for them to eventually have this downfall during the match that would end up costing them their singles match, was MJF basically saying like, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't give you a ride last week because I have chronic back pain from carrying the whole business and I had to lay down and I couldn't lend you in the car. And Sammy's like this goofball and he is, you know, totally believing what MJF says. And I thought that was really hilarious. And I kind of like how, again, like you mentioned, all these little things kind of played into the actual matchup itself and you were seeing it, or even just like little things like when Darby was choking both MJF and Sammy Guevara with the Burberry scarf, even little things like that played into it all very nicely. So I do agree with you where it did feel a little too convoluted to get from point A to point B, but in the end it kind of worked itself out. And yeah, it was a predictable, like you said, but I think that was probably what was going to work out the best.
Right. And
oh man. All right.
Like we talk about like pacing with the storylines, like this gap, especially between Revolution and Double or Nothing, has, I've really felt it where it's like, there's a bit of an argument to be made for monthly pay-per-views just because of how much time there is if you just do four or five. certain parts of the year they get around it because they'll do shows like Winter is Coming and Fight for the Fallen and Fighter Fest, where it's like, hey, it's basically just a Dynamite pay-per-view. But then there are stretches where it's like, man, I could have told you what this card looked like a month ago. And then they'll still throw in three or four matches right at the end, and you'll be like, where the hell did those come from? And why are there 14 matches on this card?
They always come at you, right? Always.
Right at the end. Right at the end.
Man. All right. Well, Connor, everyone, that was our show for today. I want to thank you guys so much for tuning in. As always, I appreciate each and every single person who comes into any of the shows, no matter which show we're talking about. I seriously thank you guys so, so much. Connor, I want to thank you for coming on and being a guest and providing some insight. I thought you did a phenomenal job and gave us some really good stuff. So I really do want to thank you for that. Before we go, everyone, just a friendly reminder that if you haven't already, I did post the link in the description box below. So for those of you who haven't, who've listened to the show and want to maybe, you know, leave a nice review, please head on over to Apple Podcasts. Again, link in the description box below. Please give it some love. Give it a rating. I'm barely at 27 ratings, so I'm really trying to push this. My goal is to get to 100 by the end of the year. So if you haven't yet, this is just your reminder to do so. And then tomorrow I have an interview coming up. I won't spoil it just yet, but a pretty fun interview coming up tomorrow. I can't wait to post that up there. And then again, you guys can check out that 100K video of me unboxing my silver creator plaque award. So go check that one out. But Connor, please feel free to take the floor and let the people know where they can find you.
For sure. You can find all my stuff over at comicbook.com. We're part of the Paramount Network, so we're one of those CBS websites. It's fun. Obviously, we don't just cover wrestling. We cover all things geek culture, comic books, movies, TV, anime, gaming, you name it, we've got it. And we've got a lot of fun stuff coming down the pipe right now. We actually just dropped our interview with Cody Rhodes, where you probably saw it circulating all the websites this week, because we asked the elephants in the room, like, why didn't you call out Roman Reigns for cheating? Do you really want to go after that World Heavyweight Championship? Have you faced enough adversity? We answered these questions and more. We got a bunch more interviews coming up, especially we got full coverage of Backlash this weekend. I'm on Comic Book Nation podcast every week. I've been off last couple of weeks. I'm trying to get back into the swing of things. That's every Friday live on Twitch and on YouTube over at Comic Book Nation. And keep your eyes peeled out for a little professional wrestling promotion based out of here in Nashville called FXC. When you get the chance, we are building towards our first show, and we got some pretty cool stuff in store. Details on all that will hopefully be coming soon.
You're in Nashville?
I am in Nashville, yes.
Music City. I always think you're in Canada.
Why? You never know when someone's in Canada. They always hide it from you until they're like, surprise, I'm in Toronto. It's like, you bastard.
This whole time, I thought you were in Canada.
No, ma'am.
I didn't know you live in Nashville then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And yet I wasn't at the SummerSlam that was just here for personal reasons. So so everyone was like, where were you? I was like, I had to be in Chicago for a thing.
Taylor Swift right now is in Nashville for her concert. I'm pretty sure you've seen that in your local news.
Well, my better half is going, so I'm aware. Oh,
she's going to have a good time.
She's going to have a great time, yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. Well, Connor, again, thank you so much. Guys, give Connor some love. Of course, his handle's here on the screen, but I also posted the link to his Twitter in the description box below if you guys want to go ahead and give Connor some love. You guys know where to find me, at @_DeniseSalcedo, and we will catch you back here on Friday for some SmackDown conversation. Bye, everyone.